Welcome to the GeoMob Podcast, where we discuss geo-innovation in any and all forms, whether for fun or profit. Hi guys, welcome to the final GeoMob Podcast of 2024.
Wow, welcome, hi.
Hello, hello.
Have we gone through a whole year?
Have we got what?
Have we gone through a whole year?
Have we done another year? It's all, you know.
Time is speeding up. We seem to be getting to the end of years quicker and quicker all the time.
Yeah. I think the atomic clock is moving faster.
Well, just look at the number of episodes that we've recorded for the podcast. It's amazing.
Yeah.
52, I think, for this year. We did one every week. So well done to us. Great consistency.
Yeah.
Let's get right into that. Let's talk about what we did well this year.
So we did 52 episodes. We had an amazing selection of speakers. But more importantly, hold on. Welcome, Alistair, to the first yearly roundup that you've done with us.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And you guys say, oh, you've done 52, you've released 52, but now that I can see behind the curtain, the rate at which you record episodes is brilliant. So yeah, there's lots in the bag already, ready for 2025.
Indeed. So one of the big events of 2024 was getting Alistair to join us, somebody who actually knows something about Earth observation rather than Ed and I just babbling away. So welcome, Alistair. I think
Indeed.
That was a great
welcome.
Progress for us.
Thank you. It's great to be here. I'm really enjoying it so far. I've had amazing conversations, which is exactly why I wanted to get back into podcasting, is to find interesting people to have those really sort of fascinating, in-depth conversations with.
I've enjoyed your episodes as well. Great to have you on the team.
Me too. So that actually makes me want to ask both of you a question that we didn't prepare in advance, so you can look at me with horror, which is, why do you do this? Alistair first, because you're the new guy. Why are you doing this?
I definitely do it because I like learning stuff. I like going to conferences in order to learn stuff, not necessarily to tell people about what I'm doing. I like being able to ask inquisitive questions of people and find out new topics that I didn't know anything about. And that's sort of one of the brilliant things about Earth observation and, I guess, geospatial in broader terms, is there's so much stuff that people are doing. And some of it is really tangential to what you think might be the sort of academic geospatial Earth observation track or the traditional track. I was speaking to someone recently about trying to measure river flow using Earth observation. That's going to be coming out in 2025. And the entire thing, we probably recorded, I don't know, a third of the conversation that we ended up having, just because every time he said something, there was a new question that came up. And literally, the podcast could have gone on for probably a couple of hours. Really fascinating to be able to get in touch with people and find out new stuff. That's my main driver, is just if I can learn stuff, then I'm hoping that the listeners can learn stuff as well.
Ed?
Very similar. I enjoy the chance to just have interesting conversations with people. Often the guests I speak with are people who presented at an event, and you know, maybe I got a little of a taste of what they're working on. Then the podcast is the chance to go deeper on that. Also, I like that it gives me the chance to talk with people, you know, who geographically are kind of farther away. So you're not limited anymore just to the people who are just in your specific city. Or whatever. Also, to be honest, you know, I mean, geocoding is so dynamic and exciting and intense. Sometimes it's good just to have a chance to calm down with the podcast, you know, to get off the intense, you know, the sex, the drugs, the rock and roll, that, you know, of what goes on with behind the scenes of geocoding API. you just need a breather sometimes, you know?
Yeah, it's pretty intense, I guess, yeah. House numbers and buildings and stuff, yeah, pretty intense. I mean, for me, it's different because, like, I'm the old guy in the room and I'm sort of over the hill, whatever you want to say, and I'm not working anymore. You know, I mentor a couple of people, but I'm not really working anymore. So it's a great opportunity for me to hang out with people that I wouldn't get to meet and talk to people. And some, you know, my two focuses, I think, over this last year have been open source and really quirky things. You know, I mean, I tend not to do the stuff that Alistair's doing, the sort of tech stuff, and you do a lot of tech stuff as well, Ed, you know, when you're interviewing people, they're founders and things, whereas I get to talk to people about open source and business models, and I get to talk to artists and creators and academics and people that I wouldn't get to talk to otherwise. And I mean, we'll maybe touch on it later in the podcast, but it's been wonderful over, is it 5 years now or 4 years? 5 years, I think.
Coming up on 5 years in March, it'll be 5 years. Yeah.
It's nearly 5 years, which is pretty remarkable that we've been doing this babbling about Geo for 5 years. And almost everybody, and we'll talk about our failures in a bit, but almost everybody that I've approached has been happy to come on the podcast or has been delighted to be invited onto the podcast. And that's a great feeling, you know, when people want to come on the podcast and talk to us, and then it's just great fun. This isn't work, it's fun. Okay, so looking back on our year, give me your favorite podcast moment or event moment, or even one of each, Ed, if you want. Go on, you go first.
Well, my favorite event moment, I have to say, I did think about this. First of all, congrats to us because we had 19 events last year.
Wow.
Which is obviously a new record, and full credit to the organizers in all the different cities. My favorite event moment came in Berlin in October. It was a talk by a guy named Javier Jimenez-Shaw. He gave a talk about why he loves the Mercator projection. and it was a nice talk. But most importantly, well, there were two things. First, in his talk, he said he put up a picture of Mercator, a drawing, an etching, of course, from the 1500s or whatever. And at that moment, you know, he made a comment and you realized Javier looked just like Mercator. Like, he had the exact same, you know, beard and the same styling. So I thought that was pretty impressive that, you know, someone uses Mercator as his fashion model. And then later when we were at the pub, so Javier gave this very nice talk, and I guess he's really into projections and things. And, you know, after a beer or two, I went over to him and I asked him whether he himself is working on his own projection. And he did not deny it. He did not deny it. So I'm hopeful that we're going to get a follow-up on that talk in the coming years where he unveils his projection. So that was it. What about you guys?
Alistair, you go first.
So I regret to say I've not been to an event yet. That's one of my plans.
That's going to be a resolution for 2025.
Exactly, Alistair. Yeah. But I do have two episodes that I particularly liked. I feel a bit bad because one of them's one where I was doing the interviewing. So the first one was with Thierry Gregorius, and it was about the coaching that he does, which I just thought was really interesting because it's one of those things that, again, as I was mentioning earlier, it's sort of tangential to sort of geospatial, but actually the work that he does is very rooted in geospatial. And that was a really interesting discussion about something that doesn't come up overly often in terms of podcasts in the geospatial sphere. So that was cool. And then the other one I really like is the one I did with Neil Sims about land degradation, just because that whole piece of work, that technical piece of work and that project and initiative is something that I genuinely really enjoy working on when I had the opportunity back in 2020. And I just find the enthusiasm of both Neil and all the people in that sort of area really infectious. It's really good. It's one of those positive stories about monitoring, looking at change, and then doing something about it, rather than just sort of hand-wringing that sometimes you get maybe if you collect huge data sets and then go, oh, everything's burning and we're doomed. But actually, you know, you can use those data sets in a way to enact positive change for the world. And that's what that group's doing. So that was really interesting for me.
Cool. Really cool. Nice. I mean, there's so much exciting stuff and positive stuff goes on in this space. You know, it's great to be working in it. So my favorite event has to be that OpenStreetMap birthday party event in London. We had, I think it was 120 people there. I mean, we had a massive bar bill. Got to mention the bar bill, because if anybody's listening and they want to sponsor us, the bar bills are getting horrendously big, which is great because it means lots of people are coming. It's not so great because beer prices in London particularly are astronomical nowadays. But it was just a fantastic event. It was quirky. It was eclectic. It was full of lots of people that we didn't know, which is wonderful that they're coming to the event. So that was my favorite event. But I want to give add in a podcast. And I can't add in one podcast. I could add in 50 podcasts just to cover the year. But I wanted to mention, I did a podcast near the beginning of the year with Ana Lucia González Paz called about her project A Map Inside. Right. And I don't know what you call this sort of stuff, personal geography, psychogeography. I don't know what the name is for it, but she did this beautiful flip book which describes her personal map of going back home to her home, which I think is in Colombia. And if I've got that wrong, I'm really sorry, Anna. And it was just beautiful. You know, the book is beautiful. She's an absolutely fabulous person and a brilliant speaker. And she's a great artist and an illustrator and a map creator. And it was just a lovely thing. And it prompted me to think about A Map Inside Me that dates back to my childhood. And then it prompted a few of the listeners to sort of comment on their personal maps where they remembered something in their past or a place that was very personal to them. So it was a great podcast. And the other one that I just wanted to give a shout out for, and calling out podcasts is a bit rotten in a way, because every one of the people who's been on the podcast has been great. But you know, you can't call out all 50 of them, which was a conversation I had with Doug Specht, who's an academic at, I think, the University of Westminster. And it was called Mapping the Unmappable, and it was about mapping conflict. And it was, I mean, it was just a brilliant conversation. I mean, lots of stuff that I hadn't really thought about that he'd brought to this subject. It was based on an academic paper that he'd written, but it was highly accessible. And it was also really, really, you know, for me, it was like just heaven to be talking in this detail with somebody who really knew his shit on this stuff. So thanks to Doug, thanks to Anna, and thanks to the other 48 people who were on the podcast this year.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. They're all really, really good podcasts. It's very difficult to choose, like you say.
You know what stands out there for me, Stephen, is both of those conversations that were, you know, not startups or not businesses, not commercial entities trying to promote. I mean, we often have on the podcast, we have people volunteer to come on, and usually it's someone trying to promote their business, which, you know, as a business owner myself, obviously I get it. You need to promote your business, but nevertheless, both in the in-person events and on the podcast, I do find that the more personal stories are the ones that kind of stay with you longer rather than just the, you know, hey, we launched this new feature or this new thing or whatever. I mean, of course, those are interesting also, but those, the ones that stick with you are the more where they come from a place of kind of a deeper intrinsic motivation, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's hope we have another 50 of those conversations in the coming year. So I think we mentioned being turned down. And I said that one of the pleasures of the podcast is that most people, when you ask them, say yes. Ed, have you been turned down in the last year?
I have been turned down, and it's frustrating because the most specific recent case, it was someone who spoke at an event and did a great job speaking at the event, very informative and interesting presentation, and then this person didn't have the confidence or didn't feel like they were ready to be on the podcast, which is very frustrating because I would love to get that topic out to a wider audience. So I don't know. My main call to all the listeners is I wish we had more people volunteer to come on the podcast. Even if they, you know, feel like perhaps they're not the most polished speaker or whatever, or even if the project, I think sometimes people think their project needs to have been a raging success and had some, like, you know, stratospheric sales numbers or something or usage, or that's not the case at all. I mean, I think we can learn a lot more from projects that didn't go well.
Absolutely. So, and also, I think we should say that not everybody who comes on the podcast has English as their first language.
True.
And that's fine. It's absolutely fine. And we can adjust the conversation and we can go slower and we can do more preparation. There are loads of ways to help people to get on the podcast if they're concerned about recording a podcast in English, which isn't their first language. So I think that's important to say. Alistair, have you been turned down this year?
I have. So I've only had a few people that I've really reached out to. I have been turned down, and it was interesting because it was very much for the sort of similar reasons to Ed was saying, in that, you know, there's concerns about whether the project is up and running enough and got enough users, or there's concern around sort of whether or not there'd be engaging enough speakers, which I think really the onus is on us as the hosts to make the podcast engaging and to ask the right questions and extract the right information, which sounds a little officious, but, you know, we're trying to make sure that it's a fun experience for all the people that come on the podcast. I think the funniest thing that's happened to me on the few podcasts that I've recorded so far is that the software that we record through, although we use the audio, there is a video. And I think to a person, every single person has got really freaked out by the fact there's video, because there's so many podcasts that now are on YouTube and they're like, oh my God, we're not on YouTube, are we? It's like, no, we're not on YouTube.
No. And I think it's a good point. You know, lots of people that I have recorded with, when we finish and we do the, you know, we stop recording and then we do the wrap up at the end, and they say that was really fun. And the answer is, yeah, of course it's really fun, because all we're doing is having a chat. You know, if we were in the pub or in a coffee bar, we'd be having the same chat. We've just got the microphone on so that we can share it with other people. So I thought I'd had a good year in terms of turndowns, because I mean, pretty much everybody I've ever asked has always said yes. They've been delighted to come on the podcast, you know, and right the way through to managing to get a couple of sort of pretty big industry figures coming on the podcast and talking very freely. I was turned down in the last couple of weeks by a big corporate where I thought I had a really good contact and I'd be able to get a speaker. And I was turned down because I was told our podcast didn't have enough reach, which was disappointing.
First of all, I even wonder how they would establish that, because it's, I mean, one of the travesties of podcasting is it's very difficult to get accurate numbers as to number of listeners. And
This is a very big corporate, and I guess if you've got maybe national news stations or television stations and you've got the GMR podcast, we're not exactly a heavy hitter, are we? I mean, let's be real about this, guys. You know, we've got a few thousand geeks out there. Bless you all, my geeky friends. But we don't sort of rank in the millions or the tens of millions. So anyway, that was a turn down, which I have an ambition to remedy that in the coming year. So let's see what we can do, which is a good lead in to an ambition for the coming year.
Well, first of all, let me say one point on that, Stephen. It's always about quality, not quantity. So this is always
been.
I did say that. But that honestly, from day one with the events, we've always said that it's not about getting, you know, 500 people to the event. It's about getting the right 25 people who actually are interested in geospatial, and then having good conversations. So. I mean, of course, it's nice if it grows, but as long as those people are actually motivated by the topic. Ambitions, I mean, I have to say, this year has really gone fantastically in terms of, you know, we had, as I said, we had 19 events, and many of those are in new cities, because we've had people come, you know, volunteer to organize them. We had Belgium for the first time. They had two events. Huge shout out to Gala in Edinburgh. They've had three events in Edinburgh. We just now at the end of the year had Netherlands. So in that regard, I don't know. Maybe we'll add a few more cities or things to it if people want to volunteer. But if not, I'm fine with as it is, because frankly, it's so much already. So my ambition is just keep going with great events in the cities that I kind of organize. Interesting conversations. On the podcast side, it's not so much about any individual episode, but it's about, as I said, 52 episodes. I mean, that there's a whole machine behind the scenes to keep it going.
Yeah.
So, and in that regard, it's great, Alistair, that you joined us, because frankly, there was a period kind of in the summer I was starting to get a little burned out, I have to say. But we've done, you're now with us, recording great events. We've kind of got some more help on the back end of producing everything. So that also has alleviated things a bit. So I'm re-energized. I'm charged up.
Great. So I know you'll blush a little bit, that our listeners will be able to hear you blushing. But a big thanks should go to OpenCage, because we wouldn't have this without OpenCage. You know, I mean, it's not costless and it's certainly not effortless. And all the effort that you put into this is effort that is taken away from OpenCage. So a big thanks to OpenCage for the fact all of this. And
thank
listeners,
you.
Ed Freifogel is scarlet at this moment. So, Alistair, ambition.
So I guess ambition is to make it to a GMOB in-person event, London.
You can do it, Alistair. You can do it.
Exactly. I mean, London would be the most obvious, but what I really like now is that there's so many all around Europe and elsewhere that, and it seems like potentially the numbers are increasing again, that I can go on holiday somewhere and there might be an event that I can just pop along to. So
right. That is something that has happened several times this year. Several people came to Barcelona and stuff, and it's really cool. I really enjoy it when people come to different cities. So you should absolutely do that. Although you should also come to London.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's on my ambition list. And then in terms of the podcast, just to get a really good mix, I think, of speakers. What I'm really looking for is both those sort of practical applications of Earth observation, but also to get into the nitty-gritty around some of the new techniques that are happening. So, in the physics, the computer science, the geography, the, dare I say it, AI, etc., around Earth observation, and really sort of pick some of that apart. So, yeah, I think I'm really looking forward to 2025. I think there's going to be some great conversations.
Great. So I've got an ambition and a hope. The ambition is that in 2025, we have a geomob in North America.
It's not in our hands.
We need
someone in North America to take
it. I realize that, but by putting it out there, maybe we make it happen. And we've got a lot of listeners in North America, and organizing, starting a geomob is not difficult. And Ed and I will help you and guide you. And we've got briefing notes for you on how to do it and everything. So somebody out there, hopefully, is going to hear this podcast and say, I'm going to do it in 25. So that's my ambition. And my hope, and this is a very personal hope, is that the situation in the Middle East comes to a point that we can have a geomob Tel Aviv in 2025. I don't know whether it's going to be possible. I don't know whether the organizers are going to be up for it, but please let there be the conditions where it is a possibility. And that's my hope for 2025.
Agree. I, having attended the last Tel Aviv event, which I guess was about 18 months ago now.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun. So I hope that's possible as well.
And podcast-wise, I've got to say, we've had a fantastic year, but as you guys pointed out to me just before we started recording, we haven't had a scoop. And we have had a couple of really big scoop-type podcast events, you know, that were sort of, oh, wow, those little guys got so-and-so to talk about such-and-such. So my hope is that in 2025, one of the three of us manages to get something that we can all acknowledge as a scoop.
That would be very cool.
Yeah, it would be cool.
I do also have a hope. I've just realized that there is something I've always wanted to do, and I'm not saying that I want to do it in 2025 because it might need some planning and some building up to, but I would love to be recording the podcast on a panel at the front of a conference, that sort of thing. I think that'd be really fun to have a live audience. I mean, there's so much that could go wrong,
but it would be
fun to have a go.
And I mean, other podcasts have done this and had a live event, and they tend to, you know, if you've got a dedicated following, they tend to go pretty well. And certainly at a GEO conference where there will be lots of people.
I get the idea, but I, first of all, just the logistics of organizing that, but also as someone, I listen to a lot of podcasts, and obviously there are podcasts where they do this. And I, as a listener, I don't perceive much of a benefit versus just doing a normal podcast where the conditions actually can be better. No. I have to say, I'm not such a fan of, right now there are three of us. In general, I struggle when there are podcasts with like four or five, six people just acoustically, just hearing.
Yeah.
Because it's like people are talking on top of each other and it doesn't, I don't know. It's just, that's, I love our live events, but that's not what I'm really looking for in a podcast format. In the podcast format, I'm looking more for like a coherent conversation. So.
Okay. All right.
To each their own. Go for it, Alistair.
In 24, we tested out Ripple. We switched to a new recording platform at the end of 23. And I think the new recording platform has been a cracking success. And I think a shout out for riverside.fm. If anyone is listening to us and wondering about the technology we use, it's great technology and we've been really happy with it all year. We tried out Ripple. Ed, what did you think of that? What is Ripple, first of all? What is Ripple?
The idea is that it's kind of a, I guess, a social network or something. But anyway, as a user, you can kind of follow the podcast, and it's a place for people to comment on the podcast. And it tries to solve the great weakness of podcasting is it's us speaking, and we don't necessarily get feedback. And of course, sometimes you get in-person feedback, but it can be weeks or months later, or occasionally people comment on various different social medias about an episode. But the idea is that you have one place for all the people who are truly fans of the podcast, and then we can pose questions and discuss things there. It doesn't seem to have quite gotten critical mass, I would say. So
that's a polite way of describing it, I guess.
So, you know, it's, I guess the what I would say is that the problem it attempts to solve, which is giving feedback to the podcast, remains. So if you're out there listening and you enjoy the podcast, please tell us. Or if you hate the podcast, or you something we should change or whatever, please do give us that feedback by whatever channel.
So you say by whatever channel. And 2 or 3 years ago, that was an obvious choice. You know, whatever channel was one channel, it was Twitter, I think. You know, and if you worked in tech, if you worked in geo, the channel that you use was Twitter. That's certainly not the exclusive choice of our community of listeners, I don't think, today. Alistair, what are you using?
Yeah, I'm sort of all over the place. It's a bit weird. So probably beginning of 2024, I moved to Mastodon, and it was very much right, get rid of Twitter, which I hadn't really used for about a year anyway. And then, as plenty of people have said before me, it's a very different experience on Mastodon. Without the algorithm. Then Blue Sky came along, and I resisted and I resisted and I resisted. And then someone posted something on Mastodon about how many Earth observation people, scientists mainly, were over on Blue Sky. So I thought, okay, I'll give it a go. So I had a look in there. And it does seem very vibrant. I mean, it does genuinely seem like Twitter was right at the beginning. However, the older I get, the more I become a sort of more of an open zealot, as it were, in that I get really frustrated when the internet is just getting sort of bought up by all of these companies and controlled by all of these companies. And so I really like the ethos around Mastodon. So that's where I would say I am primarily. But I'm part of another group, OSGO UK, and we have a similar issue with the fragmentation of comms. So they have a matrix room, they have a LinkedIn page, they have Blue Sky, they still have their accounts on X, they have Mastodon. I mean, and it's, I guess for me, Ripple was another thing on top of everything else. I quite liked Ripple when I went in it, but there wasn't enough happening for me to stay in it. It's a really tough one at the moment. I don't particularly want to go to Blue Sky, but that does seem to be where the majority of the people are. And what's the point of a social network if not to interact with people? However, the conversations that I have in Mastodon are really nice and really nuanced and engaging and thoughtful. And so I must admit, I do like that there. But I guess overall, in the grand scheme of things, I'm just trying to reduce all of my social media interactions because it's just a bit wearing. So that's where I am.
Ed?
Yeah, it's uncanny because I think you absolutely summarized my own opinions as well, in that I got sick of Twitter. I want Mastodon to succeed because it's open. Obviously, it is clunky. It's hard. It's just not a smooth experience as one would hope. I don't have the energy to also do Blue Sky. And actually, this year now with for GeoMob, we also started the LinkedIn group, which has become quite a lot of people are just on LinkedIn. I mean, one thing I did realize for all the talk of how we used to engage on Twitter, there were people who were not on Twitter and not on any social media. And I feel like everyone is on LinkedIn because they need it as a kind of a professional tool. So what we see is that people are following us on LinkedIn and commenting on the photos and things like that after an event. I don't know. I've reached the point now where I think the sanest, healthiest thing is just to reduce my time on social media rather than fight with all these different tools. And that's kind of the approach I've taken. So.
And I think that's the best thing about the demise of Twitter. That going back 2 years before Musk bought it, I was spending far, far too much time scrolling through my Twitter feed. And I was too active. You know, I was posting too many times a week. And it was obsessive. It was an addiction, I think, you know.
Well, it's brutally effective, exactly, at getting you addicted, getting you enraged, getting, you know, finding exactly the buttons to press to trigger your instinctive reactions.
And I've gone the same journey as you, Alistair. You know, I went to Mastodon. It's lovely. It's not... I mean, as a user experience, and I'm not talking about the content of the social media, I'm talking about the user experience of Mastodon is not very user-friendly, in my opinion. It's clunky. It lacks a lot of things that I'd like to see. But you do have good conversations there, and I tend to only be following people that I vaguely know. I don't, you know, there's no journalists or politicos on Mastodon that I'm aware of. Maybe there are a few, but so it is quite sociable in that regard. Blue Sky is, you know, I've got to say, Ed, and it's really neat. You know, it sort of does the things that you want it to do. It doesn't have an algorithm. It's got loads of features which actually make it easy to sort of segment. You know, I can separate the Arsenal fans and the Arsenal community from the geotech community. And that's, you know, that's quite cool, right? I quite like that. You know, sometimes I just want to see what the Arsenal crowd are saying about last night's game or whatever. And sometimes I want to just catch up with my friends in the geo community, you know, and I don't always want the two mixed together. So I quite like Blue Sky.
I hadn't realized it did that. That is a very neat feature.
Yeah. You can make lists and you can get feeds, and you can also get feeds where you don't follow people, but you get a feed that's not curated. It's just a collection of people that you don't actually have to follow, but you can just glance at what they're saying occasionally. It's got some nice features. And I just wonder in 25 whether I'll be able to keep up Mastodon and Blue Sky, or whether I will move to Blue Sky or get bored with it and just stay chatting to a few people I know on Mastodon. I think less time spent looking at a screen is probably a good thing for me anyway.
That probably is true. That should probably be a good resolution for all of us for 2025. Yes.
What? Less time looking at a screen. Yeah. Okay. I think we're done, guys. I think we're done. We've talked about our ambitions, our turndowns, our favorites. A shout out to all our listeners. There'd be no point in us doing this without you. So thank you very much, everybody who's listened to us, who's come to an event, who's thinking of coming to an event, who's thinking of starting an event in North America. To all of you, thank you. Happy New Year. Whatever you're doing over the next couple of weeks, enjoy it. Alistair and Ed, season's greetings to you.
Same to both of you, to all of our listeners. I guess I'll just close with saying, I really do encourage anyone out there listening who has not yet spoken at an event to please volunteer to do so. We always need speakers. So please come along to an event, check it out, and then give us your talk.
Okay. That's a wrap. That's the end of 2024, guys.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Bye.
Thanks for joining us today on the GeoMob podcast. We hope you enjoyed the discussion. You can get the show notes over on the website, which is at thegeomob.com. And while you're there, you can sign up for our monthly newsletter and find links to our accounts on Mastodon and LinkedIn, so that you can stay up to date on all our upcoming events. We hope to see you at an event soon.